Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way every week from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time Saturdays. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We also rebroadcast this program on Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific Time on a2zen.fm. That is on the internet. And we are also archiving these programs at richarddugan.com. The radio show page. So lots of opportunities for you to listen to our guests and what they have to say, as well as information that you can check out. We will give you the website access, the information. We link to their website, so you can go to our site, richarddugan.com, and click on the link to their website and check out all the information that they have to offer. You will no doubt notice that there is very little information about my guests on my website, and there's a reason for that. It's called not wanting to reinvent the wheel. If they've already created it, what do I need to create it for? I'm just going to use my website as a portal. And boy, I've got a lot of portals. Because there are, I'm not even going to try to do the math. In 52 weeks every year, and having done this program for over 6 years, you do the math. I think that's over 300 portals. So it's amazing this boat stays afloat with all those portals. Nonetheless, we're so glad that you're with us and joining us and sharing this time with us. And a little Angus update that he's doing well. He is probably skirting somewhere in the neighborhood of 80, 85 pounds now. Doing very well, a very loving dog, very playful dog, and I guess as German Shepherds go, very willful. He's always trying to get away with stuff. One case in point is whenever he fusses in his crate, when he has a breathy wine, he wants a drink. Now he uses that wine just to get out of the crate. So now I take him to the water bowl. And if he doesn't drink, I say, fine, then back into the crate. And this is like at 2 or 3 in the morning. I'm trying to go back to sleep and get some rest. So definitely having fun with this boy, and my dog is as well. So just a little update there. You can actually see some videos of both Makushla and Angus on my website. If you go to richarddugan.com/dogs, D-O-G-S. That's richarddugan.com/dogs. If you'd like to become a part of what we are doing on this radio broadcast, even though there is no threat of discontinuation of this program, it's taken care of from one aspect. I pay for it. So if you'd like to help me to do that or support this work and be a part of what we're doing, anything that you can do would be greatly appreciated. And to that end, I've made a very secure way for you to do that. There is a link on the missions page to a PayPal account. And if you'd like to support us, hey, whatever you can do is greatly appreciated. And if you just support us through prayer and energy, I'll take that too. That is probably even more valuable than the monetary. So any and all support is greatly appreciated. I'm very excited here on this program to have a guest returning to our program. We started an interview that ended all too soon, and it's very interesting how some of these interviews come to pass, because what I have found in my experience over the years is that when you schedule an interview and it isn't possible for it to happen for whatever reason on either side of the guest-host equation, it just means that the interview that's upcoming is going to be really good. And in this case, that is the case. I have as my returning guest, Rasha, the author of A Journey to Oneness. That is the book that we talked about the last time you were on the program. And Rasha, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program. And thanks so much for coming back.
I am delighted to be back with you.
You know, I do have to touch upon, if you don't mind, a little bit on just generally, okay? I won't go into any specifics, but generally why we were not able to carry out this interview the very first time that we did this. And that was due to a physical condition. You know, at first I thought, wow, okay, that's fine. I'm not worried. But when that happened, that thought of, as I shared with our listeners just a moment ago, okay, that just means that this is just going to be that much better. So I'm very excited that we have all the logistics worked out, and you're back with us to talk about your latest work. It's I refer to it as it's quite a tome. Hey, Journey to Oneness is your is your latest work, and we are going to continue that conversation, if you will. It wasn't that we were interrupted, it's just we ran out of time.
I know, but there's so much to tell.
There really is. First of all, I want to tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you through onenesswebsite.com. That is the website, onenesswebsite.com. We are linked to that website as well, and we encourage you to get more information, go to the website. You have a lot of things available for people on your website. Before we dive back into the subject matter of A Journey to Oneness, that are available to people. You have, of course, the availability to purchase the book. You have, it looks like, some CDs and some other materials, as well as, I think there's some videos on your site as well?
No, they're not videos.
There's none yet.
An audio book in several different formats.
Okay.
The audio book of Oneness is available in an MP3 format, as a download, and as a 16-CD set. Three different choices for that audio book. There is a meditation CD that is just gorgeous, that you can buy through the website or, of course, through Amazon.com. It's also available digitally as a download. The new book is available, A Journey to Oneness, through the website. But most importantly, there are some lovely free things that people can sign up for by going to the homepage of the Oneness website, onenesswebsite.com. Those are email programs that give you just gorgeous photographs and with quotations that'll come a couple of times a week. So some people print them out and put them on the fridge. You can just use it as a reminder of some of the most important points in this book.
Now, is this the Wisdom of Oneness message that you're referring to?
Yes, the Wisdom of Oneness messages is a beautiful series. There are, I think, 57 of those.
You know, if someone were to have the wherewithal to do this, Russia, they could actually print each one of these, say, on photographic paper. I mean, and put it in a frame. I mean, these are that nice. The imagery is that beautiful that you could do that. And go ahead and continue.
Absolutely. Or they can share them. Mm-hmm. They're so beautiful that they lend themselves to being obviously shared on Facebook and sent in emails to people who need to hear that exact quote in that day.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, everybody knows somebody who that was meant for. So they're designed in such a way that they're just perfect for sharing. There's also an audio email series that's a one-minute meditation that is the very most powerful paragraphs from the book Oneness, taken from the audio book, so you'll hear my voice reading it to you, and you can close your eyes and have a one-minute immersion into the wisdom of oneness. Mm. That's another totally separate sign-up. Mm-hmm. That you can do, and there's 171 in that series, so it'll run at least 6 months. Mm. They're lovely, and there's no catch, there's no strings, nothing to buy. It's a gift. So go to the Oneness website and take a look, see if that's something you'd like to receive in an email.
Absolutely. And again, that's onenesswebsite.com, onenesswebsite.com. Well, let's dive back into A Journey to Oneness. As I think I was sharing with you a little bit about what I refer to as my first, I'll call it metaphysical primer. And in my case, it was Autobiography of a Yogi. Mm. And your book is about as large in terms of your content. And I'm rereading that again. And I'm finding some extraordinary things that it wasn't that I missed. It's just that it's been a long time since I have listened to it. And I have that on audiobook, but it goes back to another source. I know that other people have recorded it. But what I'm finding is that no matter how old the material is or new, it seems as though when we start to really dig into the information, we see that it is giving us all the same message of oneness.
Mm. Well, the truth doesn't go stale. It remains the truth. And it comes through many different sources and many different languages. But in essence, we are all one. And that's where we're going, the recognition of that. the experience of it.
So to catch some folks up on the story, if you will, your journey, how far back, and not so much in years per se, but maybe at a particular age, when did this all begin for you?
Oh gosh, you know, where does the spiritual journey begin? Actually, I think the last chapter began with that question. It's hard to pinpoint it because it's an evolution of a soul. When do you become aware that you are on a spiritual journey? I think, you know, that's what occurs to us when we start digging, like, wait a minute, when did all this start? There are major turning points that are clues for us that we start to identify with what we're doing, that we are on a spiritual quest, that we are fascinated with the possibilities of digging deeper into the timeless questions, into the experiences that come when you start digging. I don't know where did it start. For me, I suppose in the 80s, I started with an insatiable fascination with astrology. That was the first big one. And I started asking yourself, after you realize that it works, how is this possible?
And I think the one thing that a lot of people don't seem to understand is that astrology has been around for thousands of years. It's only in the West in the last, I'll say, 50 or 60 years that it has received its poor reputation, specifically in the West, as being sort of hokum and hocus-pocus or woo-woo and so forth. And yet there are all different types of astrology. I'm familiar with Eastern Vedic astrology. I'm sorry?
I said that would depend on who you ask.
Well, that's true. You know? That is absolutely. It's all subjective. I certainly acknowledge that. But the majority of folks in this country who consider themselves to be rational people really wouldn't put much faith in astrology. And yet the reality is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there, and I know there's more at play here than just magnetism, but when you have the planets in the universe spinning around the way that they are, and we are electromagnetic beings, and when you take a look at the effect of just our moon, our single moon orbiting our Earth, and its effect just on the oceans alone, that's not astronomy per se. That, to me, that is part of astrology, because you are dealing with the magnetic fields as they are changed and pulled and pushed and so forth, that then make the changes, if you will, in our lives, in those charts that people create. Is that a fair assessment in a very primitive way?
Well, I think that you can't separate the two, astrology and astronomy. They're inseparably intertwined.
Okay.
With astrology, you are able to discern levels of meaning from those planetary positions. And there's a science of how to do that that delivers extraordinarily accurate results. So that's what really got my attention. And I was taught in London back in the 80s in the traditional way, without computers or calculators, doing all of the calculations by hand.
Mm-hmm.
And you could give me the birth date of somebody I had never seen and knew nothing about, and I could give a pretty accurate description of that person. You have to start asking yourself, how is this possible? How does this work?
Yeah.
And that was, for me, one of the big steps that started getting me to ask the bigger questions.
Yes, indeed. And our Vedic astrologer has been on this program a number of times, and he received a phone call and was asked very bluntly by what I perceived to be, as at that time, a skeptic to his astrology work. How do you know that, or how does it work? How do you know that it works? To which he responded, first of all, quite honestly, you know, I've never been asked that question before. And he says, I don't know how it works. All I know is that it works.
Yes. And I would affirm that.
Yeah.
I would affirm that. It's extraordinary.
Now,
but I am not an astrologer.
No, no, no.
I was a student of astrology 30 years ago.
Right.
And that piqued my interest. That was one of the stops along the way.
But that takes us to another step in this process of a journey to oneness, I think, because does it not require us to begin to shift from a place of belief, I believe in astrology, to a place of knowing? I know that I know that it works, or anything else for that matter that at one time we believed, but we don't use that word anymore. Now we know that we know.
Well, that is the essence of a spiritual quest in general. And that's the shift that so many people are experiencing now, is they are instinctively wanting to reach beyond the mentalized grasp of concepts. That's how many people jump into a spiritual exploration, is they want to understand how it works. After a while, you know all of this theoretical stuff, and what there is left to have is the experience itself. That's where you take the leap between believing and knowing. It's experiencing it from your own experience of it.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing, not surmising, not drawing conclusions, but knowing irrefutably that you have touched into something for which there are no words.
So in this process and journey of yours, was there a point early on when you had certain, what we can call now, say, spiritual or supernatural experiences, mm-hmm. that at the time that they happened, you were uncertain or you were not secure in the knowledge that I know that this is true, because this may have been the first time this had ever happened, and it may have, I don't know, shocked you? Because it does a lot of people when they have these kinds of things happen. They start questioning their sanity sometimes.
Yeah, many people do. I think what you described probably happened to me the first time that I heard the words, "I love you," whispered, or not whispered. Telepathic is the word I'm groping for, a mm-hmm. telepathic communication from something that was not my thought.
Mm.
But there was not a sense of fear about it, because at the same time, I was completely immersed in the embrace of a loving energy, so that I knew that something extraordinary and wonderful was happening. That was my first taste of channeling, per se. That was the Hindu god Rama. That was my first teacher, and that was back in 1987. Totally spontaneous, nothing I ever thought. I didn't barely even know what channeling was, and yet it was like breathing. I just slid into a rhythm of being able to get my own consciousness in the back seat and to allow whatever was attempting to come through actually uninterrupted and very clearly.
Hmm.
And ultimately, I was taking it down like a secretary taking dictation.
So let's take a little detour here. Tell us about Rama.
Oh, my gosh. Ram, beautiful, beautiful being. And that experience lasted for me only several months because I wasn't ready. I did pursue it. And the first contact was just very unexpected. I was sitting at a lake. I was watching sparkles on the water on a picture-perfect day, just thinking, oh, my gosh, this is gorgeous, sailboats and all of that. And I heard the voice whisper, I love you. And I knew it wasn't my thought. So it began a conversation, which led to an experience. Every evening at midnight, the voice would start, go get a pencil. And I would run and get a pencil and write down what I heard. And it turned to be profound metaphysical teachings that I had no basis for at all. And afterwards, I would read it and thinking, what on earth have I written? This is gorgeous, but I don't know this stuff. So for me, that's how it happened. Ram, the Hindu god, is an aspect of God the Father. Rama was an incarnation of Lord Vishnu, which is one of the three expressions of Father consciousness within Hinduism. So that was my very first teacher. But again, I didn't stay with it. I was not ready to do this at that point. But it was, for me, getting my feet wet as a person who would go on to become a divine messenger. The next stage for me was a teacher that I knew as Amitabh, which is an aspect of Lord Shiva. But it took me a long time to realize who it was. I wasn't told. And I worked with that energy for well over 3 years and produced my first book, The Calling, as a result of it. And that was my foundation in the metaphysical understandings. Amitabh was my first guru.
Well, I need to go back.
It came from within me. It wasn't a person in a body. This was a profoundly wise spiritual teacher that emerged from within me and taught me.
And that name of that teacher again was?
Amitabh.
Amitabh.
Yes. And that is the source of the information in the book, The Calling, which is still available. Actually, it's on Amazon. It's a wonderful book.
The Calling.
The Calling.
And this is also by Rasha.
By Rasha. Has a white cover. A lot of people referred to it as the white book.
The white book. I like
that.
Let me ask you, as we go back again, when, and is it Ram or Rama?
Both.
It's both. Okay.
Both.
So when Rama spoke to you those words, I love you, what did it mean to you? What did it do to you?
I was startled because I realized that it wasn't my thought. But I automatically shifted into a conversation, almost as though I had always done it. That's what was amazing about this. When I later came to understand that I had done this in previous lifetimes, and then it all started to make sense, because why was it so easy? I shifted into, it was like riding a bike. Once you know how, you know how. But I had never done it in this lifetime.
Yeah.
But suddenly, I was channeling. I was transcribing fluently, with no practice, with no teacher.
So then there was the possibility that you had done this in a previous lifetime, ergo,
well, apparently
you'd already ridden the bicycle in another lifetime, so you were already primed and ready.
Apparently I had, and actually in this book, Chapter 10 goes into depth about one of the instances where I was functioning as a trans channel 2,000 years ago in the times of Jeshua.
Wow.
And it was quite an extraordinary story. Of the story of Leia.
Well, when we come back from our break, I want to continue our conversation in regards to the messages that you have received, and we'll talk more about that as we continue talking here with Rasha. Her book is called A Journey to Oneness. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. Stay right where you are.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and it's great to have you back with us here on this segment of the program. As we continue talking with our guest, Rasha, she's the author of, actually, there's a second book that she made reference to in the last segment. We'll first mention the first book, and that is A Journey to Oneness by Rasha, and the website is onenesswebsite.com. Kind of like that, onenesswebsite.com. The other book is called The Calling, and it's available through Amazon.com, and it's easy enough to find. I mean, Google makes things so easy these days. We're going to get back into our conversation here with Rasha and talking about A Journey to Oneness and these metaphysical messages that you received. Now, you gave us a brief description of what happened when the channeling ceased, and you had written down everything that you were asked to write down, and then you went back and read it, and you were rather astounded. Did you understand much of what was said? As far as the concepts, or were those still a little bit over your head at that point?
No, in the beginning it was very basic, very beautiful, very poetic, and profoundly wise. It was most extraordinary, but nothing that was frightening or anything like that. I had enough of a spiritual foundation at that point to know that this was something beautiful, and that at a deeper level, it's something I must have wanted or it wouldn't be happening.
Mm.
I must have drawn this experience to me.
Now, what about your upbringing, your parents, and their influence on you on a spiritual level?
I don't think that I was influenced in that way.
What kind of influence, though, did they have, if any?
At home, none. None. There was really not much going on at home. And I did not awaken spiritually until I was in my 30s.
Okay.
So it was for me a different kind of an awakening. This was an awakening of the heart that happened very spontaneously for me. It doesn't have to do with outside influences of anyone or anything. This was something that was happening within me, like I was becoming ripe. And I think a lot of people are experiencing like that. It's not that they've been hanging out with a particularly spiritual crowd and that's why suddenly they're interested. It's like something is ripening within them,
mm-hmm.
and that this is the moment. And suddenly they realize they're shifting into another gear of themselves. You are just, it's not you're becoming someone else, but you are becoming what I like to call a higher octave of your own being. And it's so dramatically different from who you are. Your priorities, your orientation are totally different. It's almost as if you become someone else,
yeah.
but it's still you. That's the amazing thing.
Now, as you continue to receive these messages, and over the course of what span of time are we talking about here?
Oh, my gosh.
I'm assuming you're still receiving the messages as well.
Yes, it's never ending. The first experience, the first encounter with Ram was in 1987. So I don't do the math. How long ago was that?
Well, that's 25, 26 years.
Yeah. Ago, this started for me. But it was an incremental journey. And then we should mention that there is yet another book involved, and that is the book Oneness,
mm-hmm.
which is very well known. We kind of left that out of the list.
Well, the show's not over.
No. Oneness is kind of the main book that that people know me by. That started in 1997.
Hmm. Okay.
And by then I had published the book The Calling and assumed that my spiritual work would be in presenting that message and that teacher to the world. And no sooner was it in print when I was told that my work with Amitabha was complete and that I would be working with a presence known as Oneness. And at first I balked. I said, absolutely not. I thought, enough. My boat's been rocked enough. This was my stability. Amitabha was my best friend. And don't tell me I'm going to have to start working with someone else. But I had emerged to the point that I was able to carry the magnitude of the energy of Oneness, and this took a decade of work. I later understood what had happened. It was all part of the training, because the level of energy that accompanies these transmissions is indescribable. It's just off the charts. So I had gone through really an initiation and a training to be able to do this and to be able to do it consistently and well. So it's been quite a journey.
So for the last 16 years, you have pretty much exclusively been working with Oneness.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and I am the messenger.
The message
of Oneness.
And the messages that you have received, as you've already shared, you know, they started out, you know, fairly simple and easily understood. But when you began to share these, or I guess let me back that question up, did you begin to share these even on an individual basis with other people around you to get their take on what was said? Or were you given some kind of an embargo by Rama and subsequently the others to hold off?
Well, the teachings of Ram were never shared. That was it was part of a training program.
Ah, okay.
And it was personal.
Okay.
The guidance that I was receiving essentially was personal. so that there was no need to share it. I was talking about the fact that I was receiving divine guidance with other people that I knew were having similar experiences at that time. But that's the only time that I spoke of it. It was my secret world.
Mm.
And then, obviously, it became much more important to share the information when the book, The Calling, was transcribed, for example. It was completed in 1990, and I was very shy. I kind of put it in a drawer and thought, well, I'll deal with it eventually. And years went by. Eventually, in 1997, I rediscovered it. I thought, my God, this has got to be published. This is fantastic. So I did. I published it, and I started to promote it and to share it quite publicly in America. And then Oneness, the transmissions from Oneness began almost at the same time. And I was told that I was transcribing a book. It took 4 years to write that book because at the same time I was living the teachings. And that was major because the concepts in the book Oneness are life-changing. And that was a major initiation for me. So I would write a couple of chapters, and then for whatever reason I put it down, and that enabled me the time and the space to have an experience that was an actual illustration of what I had just written. It was uncanny. And what's interesting is that people from all over the world have reported the same phenomenon with the book Oneness. It's loaded with what Oneness calls encodements, which are vibrational triggers calculated to stimulate within the reader an actual experience for themselves of what they've read. So they're not just believing it, they're knowing it. They're taking the leap from their minds to their hearts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's uncanny. When people read this, they'll think, wait a minute, I just read that, and it happened. And I get emails every day that describe this, and I have to chuckle to myself, thinking, okay, I don't know how it works, but that it works is unquestionable. I know that same phrase was used by someone else about astrology, but this is what's happening with the book Oneness. And the way it has a knack of being able to illustrate for you exactly what you've read from your own life experiences. So the new book, A Journey to Oneness, is my own journey into that. What happened to me as I was transcribing these principles and all of the trials and tribulations that were happening to me as I was kind of jumping into every pothole and falling down and dusting myself off and learning these principles from having gone through it, sometimes the hard way.
Yeah, we do tend to do that, don't we?
Yeah, well, I've got a knack for that, apparently. But A Journey to Oneness was a 7-year period in my life where I went through the hurdles of applying these understandings, because it's one thing to be able to grasp it mentally. It's another thing to, in the heat of the moment, be able to apply these principles and respond in the way that will help you to transcend the limitations that we're so used to. It's almost as though the divine teacher is saying, okay, you think you're smart? Well, try this. You know, try this nut for size. And they will throw you a curveball. And let's see what you do with this. So the book A Journey to Oneness is all my adventures with that. What happened in that span from 1997, when the teachings of Oneness first started, I think it goes through 2006. Because I had to end it somewhere. It was almost 600 pages long by then, and it's like, okay, I think this is enough. Yeah. This will do for now.
Yeah. There's always more time for more books. There's no question about it. So in your through your journey, as you are not only transcribing these, channeling these metaphysical teachings, if you will, you are also, you know, you're in the practice of these teachings. I mean, it's kind of hard not to be when you're, you know, right there and so forth. And I'm wondering how did you become aware of your, how do I put this? I want to say your growth, spiritual growth, if you will, through these teachings as you lived them, so that as the teachings became more, actually, as the teachings became deeper, you were able to grasp them.
Yes, and you'll find that there's a lot of repetition on this journey. It's not like you get one shot at an understanding.
You mean I don't pass test A and I move on to test B and I never have to go back to test A again?
You're going
to
get test A over and over again until you perfect it. And, you know, a lot of people have commented on the amount of repetition in this book. That is how you get drilled by life.
Yeah.
So that these understandings are instilled in you so that they become a knee-jerk reaction for you. Because it is a totally different approach to life. It's a totally different way of responding to the prompts that life gives you that enables you to transcend the stuckness that most of us have experienced most of our lives. When we are able to respond in a way that is detached, that doesn't fuel the fire that we're trying to put out, that allows us to release, for example, the emotional blockages, the repressed density, all of the things that are lurking underneath the surface vibrationally that are drawing experiences to us that we don't want. Once we are able to consistently release those energies, we find that we're living a very different kind of a life script, that the same old is not happening anymore. And it's almost miraculous when you realize, oh my gosh, am I still me? I've shifted into another gear. I'm having a very different ride through life than I was.
Mm.
Well, that's because you will have released the energies that draw categories of life experience to you through your consistent response to life's prompts.
Here's an interesting paradox to that, too, that I add in my own experience, and that is that once you have raised your awareness of a concept, especially to the practical level where you've lived it and experienced it, you cannot, from that point forward, you can never deny responsibility for your, it's what you were saying before about about that. It's like, okay, I know that I'm going to cross the light on red and we'll see what happens. And the first time that happens and I nearly get hit by a car, I'm going to cross the light on green. I can no longer deny responsibility for that lesson, for that knowledge. Mm-hmm. It cannot be undone.
You learn it from your own experience.
Right.
And sometimes we're compelled to learn things the hard way.
Sure. But the point is that you can it's one of those things where you go through school and you learn a particular curriculum, then you get into the workplace and they want you to carry out a particular assignment using the information you learned from that curriculum.
Mm.
Well, you wouldn't have gotten the job if you didn't have the education sufficient to do the job that they're now asking you to do. So you can't say, well, I don't know how to do that. Well, how did you get in here in the first place? So it's like you've been given the tools, and you can't say now, I don't have the tools, especially if you're holding them in your hand.
Well, you have the tools mentally. The
yes,
thing is,
sure.
Are you able to respond in the moment?
And that's
with
the,
those understandings,
the key. Yeah.
Which is a totally different way of responding to life.
Yes.
Are you able to do that consistently? So that's why you'll see, even though you get it, quote unquote,
right.
You're going to get episode after episode for a while to put it to the test, to be sure that your mode of response has really shifted, that you are not triggering more of the same. You're not fueling your own fire anymore. You are slowly and steadily releasing the electromagnetic charge that's drawing these unwanted experiences to you. And the book Oneness explains it in depth, in theory, how this works, and A Journey to Oneness is my illustration, plus the teachings that went with it, of how this is applied. Here's what will happen if you do that. You know, what springs to mind is an experience I had when I was 3. I remember my mother said to me, "Don't touch the iron, sweetheart, it's hot." I had no idea what hot meant until I went over and touched it, which, of course, a 3-year-old would do.
Yes.
Well, I sure found out what hot was, and I would never touch it again.
Now, here's an interesting, I'll throw another paradox out there. I remember hearing that an infant child, even, you know, 1 or 2 years of age, does not have the awareness, and I think maybe that's what this person may have meant, of pain until they have the first experience.
That's it.
But there was the paradox is, until you have the first experience, you don't know what it is, but you don't know what it is until you have the first experience.
Mm.
And I kind of went around in circles in my own mind with that one. But what you're saying is absolutely true. Mm. And I think really what I was getting to as well was what you just stated about the experiences that we draw to ourselves. It's kind of hard for me, being where I am today, knowing that I know the things that I know, okay, on a spiritual level, not just an intellectual level, that... Well, Rasha, I didn't want to draw that experience to me,
but
the reality is that I did.
But
ergo,
you didn't do it consciously.
I didn't do it consciously, but it doesn't matter consciously or otherwise. I still drew it to me. So I have to come to a place where, number one, I have to acknowledge and take responsibility for drawing that experience to me. That's the first part that I see. And then the second part is, okay, so I drew it to me. What am I going to do now?
Well, you need to know, how did you draw it to you? So you don't keep drawing these experiences that you don't want. And there's more to it than thinking positive thoughts.
Okay.
There have been some popular videos circulating in the last couple of years that make it sound too easy.
Yes.
You know, you say some affirmations or you think positive thoughts and you create your own reality. Yes, in fact, you do create your own reality. It's a complex science. It's fascinating. And the book Oneness tells you pretty much exactly how it works. You get a handle on it. You're creating your reality vibrationally. Here's how. And then you start to apply it. And life gives you testing conditions to drill you, to put it into your subconscious so that you react appropriately and give yourself the highest and the best instead of falling in the mud every minute. And it works. It absolutely works. That is the basis of these teachings. Is, yes, you create your own reality. Yes, you are powerful. Yes, you determine everything that happens. Here's how it works. And you want to try it? Get on the bike and let's ride. No training wheels. That's what happens. It's most fascinating. And when you get a handle on this, that you are in control, it is so empowering. Because you realize, my God, I am creating this.
The thing that I find so fascinating about this is, as you are sharing it with us here from your book, Oneness, as well as A Journey to Oneness and The Calling, which is the third book, is that as I am rereading this other book and I'm listening to others who have been around for generations, if you will, as far as their teachings, there has been, and I mean in the past, hundreds of years, thousands of years back, there has been scientific evidence to prove that these concepts work, and yet there are those belief systems, I'll call them, who are utilizing these scientific concepts but more in a belief-based system and wonder why it doesn't work because they're not willing to acknowledge the scientific evidence that has been there for thousands of years that supports what they're trying to do.
Well, they're not putting it into practice. They're still focused on getting it mentally.
Mm-hmm.
As are so many people who consider themselves to be on a spiritual journey. They will go to yet another weekend workshop. They will read yet another book. They will sign on for yet another expensive course. And they wonder why they're not having the exalted experiences of connecting with their God self, Well, it's because they're not doing the spiritual practice.
Yeah.
They're not doing the meditation. They're not doing the prayer. They're not doing any number of devotional practices that will produce that very result. They are wishful thinking and steeping themselves in more mentalized metaphysical theory. The theory is interesting, and it gives you a framework in which to put an experience, but it doesn't create the experience for you. You need to create the experience yourself by reaching into your own heart and extending the invitation through prayer, through whatever devotional practice you may want to concoct for yourself. There has to be some reaching out, or actually in this case, reaching in order to initiate the process to give you the experience you're longing to have. Because what there is to have is not just philosophy. It's not just a theoretical understanding of ideas. This is a profound contact that takes you beyond your entire concept of humanness to a realm that is who you really are. Mm. And the opportunity is here in these times, not just to believe it, but to know it from your own experience of it. That's what the Journey to Oneness, the book traced, is my incremental crawl down that path until I got to the point where it had happened. And for me, it wasn't an easy journey. It was a rough ride.
And it doesn't matter whether it's a crawl or a sprint, not that it is, but nonetheless, because it really goes back to a conversation that I had with my brother. We were at a reunion, and we left the lodge to take a little walk out in the desert behind the lodge. And I was sharing with him some of my insights, some profound things that I had come across. And I said, you know, it's interesting because I finally get the blah, 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 whatever the concept was that I had gotten. To which my brother said, my God, you're 33 years old and you're just now getting it. It's about time. To which I responded quite calmly, Mike, it's not when you get it. It's that you get it.
Yes.
And so in your case, as you describe it, you crawled. Mm-hmm. That was the pace at which you were able to take it in, ingest it, assimilate it, mm-hmm. and transform it and transmute it into your being to where it became knowable for you.
It became second nature.
It
was a 7-year journey for me. And also, I think I was the living illustration of the person who did it gradually, because so many people are doing it at that pace, and that they know that it's okay, that they are normal. This is not something that is going to happen to you in a weekend where someone's going to flip your switch and suddenly you're going to be enlightened.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that.
No, no.
And people have been really misled by a lot of teachers out there who are maybe opportunistic and promising people the moon for sums of money. Don't expect that you are going to have instant results on a spiritual journey. Nobody does. And this book, A Journey to Oneness, illustrates that. The way gradually, painstakingly, step by step, these concepts were instilled until suddenly my eyes were open and I realized who I was and oneness was looking out through these eyes. But it didn't happen overnight. And for most people, it won't happen overnight. So they shouldn't expect that it's going to happen instantaneously and feel that they failed or they've done something wrong. You know, I go to lectures and workshops and people are saying, like, what am I doing wrong? Why is it taking so long? Well, it's supposed to.
But that's not what they want to hear, Rasha.
This is the journey. This is an experience. It's not a destination.
Yeah.
And I know many people have said that, but it's so true.
Yeah.
You're there for the experience of this journey. All the twists and turns of the road is part of that. You don't want to miss it. You want to see from every vantage point the vistas from that level. What does it look like from there?
Yeah.
And yeah, let's climb a little higher. How does it look from this turn in the road? Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It's within the whole concept of a vast countryside. I never noticed the countryside before. It was so focused.
Yeah.
And then you get to the top of the mountain. Oh, my. Now I see it all within the context of what is really there.
You know,
like you had to have gone the journey to be able to appreciate that.
Exactly. I think that if you listening are, let's say, a lover of books, you like to pick up a book and you like to read it. The question I have for you in this context that Rasha is talking about is this. When you pick up that book, be it a novel, whatever it is, do you pick it up with the thought in mind, I can hardly wait to get to the end, or I wonder what the story is. I'm really intrigued by this story, and that's the only reason why I'm going through these pages so fast, because I love this. This is a great story, whatever it is.
Yes.
And that's the difference. Are you racing to get to the end? Now,
you want the punchline, or do you want to have the whole experience of it?
Yeah. Now, in my...
People have to realize that and not beat themselves up so much.
Yeah.
Because it takes a while. This is a beautiful experience of your life.
Yeah.
And it takes a while to appreciate all the nuances that adventure has to offer you. It's not a matter of, you know, just suddenly you are enlightened, your life is transformed, and, you know, you're ready to get on a rocket and go to the moon. It's not like that. Not at all.
Well, I know going through school, I was of the mind, I could hardly wait to get to the end of the book because I just wanted to finish it. I had so much trouble reading that if I could just get this book finished, I'd be done with it. Mm. Of course, then another book would come along, another assignment, and I'd have to start all over from square one.
Yeah.
But that's a whole different motivation. But the point is that it is the journey, not the destination.
Exactly.
And that we miss so much. As a matter of fact, to that end, I have actually been more consciously aware, especially when I'm up at my home up above Santa Barbara, and I'm walking around the property where we live, and which is very rural. It's in the wilderness, in the forest, if you will. And aside from the traffic that's passing by, maybe 75 feet or 100 feet below on the freeway, a highway below us, aside from that, I am actually more consciously listening for the sounds, the other sounds. Even if it's not the birds, it's maybe the rustling in the brush, or maybe the wind blowing through the pines or the oak trees.
That's what they call being present, Richard.
Yeah.
You can't hear the wind rustling through the leaves if you are focused on what just happened last week, and why did that guy say that, or what is going to happen in the meeting tomorrow. You never hear the rustling of the leaves. You have to be present in the moment. And that is also one of the exercises in this training, is to teach you to be in the now moment. I know that's a buzzword now, but there's so much to it, because then you are aware and your mind is present. Mm. Your mind is under control. It's not meandering or running like a wild horse in the past or in the future. It's right here and now. So what you're describing is exactly what people are shooting for, to be able to be that present, that you can hear the wind rustling through those leaves.
You know, when you talk about the now moment, which is sort of a, I'm glad that's the new buzzword, and I'm glad we've moved away from quantum. That was driving me crazy. Quantum oneness. What is quantum oneness, Rasha? But the oneness, I describe it this way. I've been in the recording industry for 34, 35 years. And it wasn't until the digital age that I was actually able to see the concept of oneness right on the screen. And that sounds kind of strange, but as I am watching the voice or the music being recorded on the screen, there's this, on the software that I use, there's this white line at the moment that the voice, the wave, the visible wave is created. And that's on the left side of that white line. On the right side of that white line, it's blank. It's flat. There's no sound there. And so when I started to converse with someone about the oneness and I was looking at the screen, I'm going, that white line is the oneness, the now moment. It's the now moment. I don't know why. And that as soon as I see the visible representation of the voice, it's no longer the now. I don't care how close it is to that white line. It's not the now anymore. Once I can see it. And I thought, wow, I never saw that before. And boom, it just shot out at me one day. And I've been kind of sharing that concept with people who understand the digital recording screen.
That's a very subtle distinction.
Yeah.
But it's a very powerful illustration of what we're talking about. That it's not possible for that line to be there except after the fact.
Exactly.
Because it's a reflection of something that happened.
It's already past tense.
It's already past tense.
Even a millisecond, it's already past tense.
Yeah.
And if it's a millisecond before, it hasn't happened.
Yeah. And you become aware of yourself being the witness, just watching, just listening.
Yeah.
That's when you know you are in the moment. You are in the now. Your mind is not wandering anywhere else. It's present.
Let me ask you about vibration. Mm. Let me ask you about the planetary vibration. It has been said that if you can find a place that is quiet enough, and I mean literally of other audible sounds aside from the natural sounds, that you can actually hear, if not feel, the planetary vibration or hum.
I have heard about this before. I have not personally experienced that. But then I haven't tried to experience it. So who knows? Have you experienced it?
I think that I have, but then I'm not sure if that's just a ringing in my ears.
Yeah, exactly.
But then again, I don't want to discount. See, I do not believe in coincidence, but I do believe in coincidence.
What's the difference?
The difference is that things do happen for a reason. They coincide, okay? They're happening together because they're supposed to happen together. Mm. Whether we understand or know the reason, and even if we never do, there is a reason whether we understand it or not, but the fact is they came together. Mm. You met that person on the street for a reason. And I kind of go back to James Redfield's the Celestine Prophecy when he talks about how each one of us has a message for the other.
Yeah.
And that if we deny that other our message, not only, and it's not quite this severe, but just to the point, not only is that a sin, but they have committed a sin through our omission because then they haven't transmitted their message to us. Mm-hmm. And so now we don't have the pieces to the puzzle that we need. They don't have the pieces of the puzzle that they need. And now we walk away deficient until the universe hopefully brings us back together again to try one more time.
There is a gift in every interaction.
Yeah.
And we have to know also that if we miss the moment, that life will give us infinite numbers of other opportunities to get it. So if there's a message you need to get, don't be attached that message has to come from a particular messenger.
True.
That message will be presented to you in another shape or form through another source. So be in the moment. Be aware. Be open to what the most unlikely people may have to offer you. There is learning and wisdom in all of it, in the most unlikely sources. And ultimately, you will get it. Like it or not.
Like it.
I found out.
Like it or not.
Like it or not.
And I remember, I don't give this out anymore because as I've taken a look at it, it didn't seem real appropriate. But the reality is that when people listen to this program and what's being said by both you and I or other guests and myself, and they've listened to the entire broadcast, they've heard the words and the message and so forth and so on. Once they've heard it, they can't unhear it.
Mm.
I try to say that in as neutral a tone as I possibly can. And the reality is that that is why it is so important to be so careful about the things that you surround yourself with. The sounds and the images and even the people, let alone the environment in which you live.
Absolutely true.
And some people would say, well, yeah, but, and I have to say, wait a minute, you have the freedom of discrimination. You can discriminate in terms of your best interest, what serves and supports you and your spiritual growth. You know, and we're not talking about other forms of worldly discrimination here. That's not what we're talking about. This is, I think it's a combination of discernment, if you will, and discrimination. You have to discern what it is that serves you. I am no longer a practicing Catholic because it doesn't serve me. Do I still have a love for the church? Absolutely. I love the ritual, the tradition, the ceremony. That is, I love going to Mass, Christmas and New Year's and other Easter and so forth, because it's incredible energy. Mm. It's a wonderful meditative place to be, okay? And because it's familiar to me and I grew up with it, and there's a warm place in my heart for that. But it's not something that I choose to, you know, continue week after week after week in that context. And that's okay. It doesn't make the church wrong and it doesn't make me wrong, because I'm not telling people to stay away.
Well, the thing is, you're probably not empowering it anymore to deliver what you think you want spiritually. You know that that source is within you.
Exactly.
You're not giving your power to a hierarchy or a structure, mm-hmm. although you still may enjoy the lovely aspects of the ritual and the sense of heritage and the traditions and the music and the candles and all of these lovely things that set the stage for a heart opening
mm-hmm.
that is
mm-hmm.
where you want to really go within yourself.
Yeah.
So you don't have to throw your religion out the window.
No.
There's beauty in it, but know that what you are seeking is universal. Mm-hmm. It is within all of us, and it is within your own very depths, waiting for you to open the door. It's there, and whether or not that happens on a Sunday morning in a church or it happens in the forest is irrelevant. Where it happens, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to happen within the context of the religion that you happen to have been born into.
Mm-hmm.
It may happen someplace else entirely that is not a house of worship. It may happen with a flower or
right.
or any other expression that serves to open your heart, which is where that divinity is
yeah.
hanging out and waiting for you.
And it's always been there.
Yes.
That's the amazing thing, is that it's always been there. There was a poem that I read, and I'm going to pull that up. If I scan, I'm going to put it up on my website so people can read it whenever they want. But it's a great poem that, and I'm going to just distill it down into its essence. And it's a conversation amongst the gods. And they are saying that man is getting smarter and wiser and so forth, and soon a man is going to want to be like us, and we have got to hide the secret of of becoming gods like us. And so the debate is as to where they will hide it. And of course they say, we'll hide it in the mountains. No, man will find a way to climb to the top of the peak and he'll find it. We'll put it in the depth of the sea. Same answer. They'll figure out a way to get down there. And so they go through 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 different places where they're going to hide it, right?
Mm.
And then one god steps up and says, I know where we'll hide it. We'll hide it in his heart. He'll never look there.
He'll never look there. How beautiful that is. I've heard that story before, and that says it all, doesn't it?
And that's where it is.
That's where it is. And all of the other stuff is calculated to point us there. It's like all the clues are being given by all the great masters throughout time immemorial, through all of these great traditions, and they're all pointing to the same place. Mm-hmm. The truth you seek is within you. It's like, hello.
Yeah. It's funny because what the image that just came to mind was the Sacred Heart of Jesus.
Mm.
What is the heart? The heart.
It's in the heart.
Yeah. Sadly, I heard a message about 25 years ago when I was working for the Christian station back in Phoenix, where they condemned this whole concept of heart-based this and that and the other, because they would find some biblical passage from the Old Testament about how, you know, the heart was the seat of evil and this and that and the other thing. I forget what the passages were, and that, you know, that this was all of the devil and so forth. And yet, I look at some.
I have to wonder who concocted that.
Well,
but that's a whole other conversation.
That's a whole other thing. But what I find so fascinating is that science once again is verifying all of this, as far as the conversation you and I are having about the importance of the heart. Science is confirming that it's the emotional and spiritual seat of man.
Yes.
That's incredible to me.
Well, it's truth, and now science is verifying it scientifically. But in fact, spiritually, this has been common knowledge for thousands of years.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible.
And unbeknownst to me, I channeled it. I brought it through and wrote it,
yeah,
having never read any of that stuff, and found out afterwards that is universal truth.
Mm.
It's come through every tradition.
It is truly extraordinary. It
yeah.
really is. Well, we have basically come to the end of our program, and would like to, again, I'm so sorry. We'll have to have you back again in 2014 to talk further about these matters. Well, thank you, and as are you, and the works that you're doing and the books that you have available, A Journey to Oneness, the book Oneness, A Journey to Oneness, which is also available on audio in different formats, and also The Calling. And we encourage you to check these works out, as well as the other materials, even the free materials that are available through Rasha and her website, onenesswebsite.com. That's onenesswebsite.com. And, of course, these interviews are available at richarddugan.com, the radio show page. And we encourage you to go to her website and check out this information. Rasha, thank you once again for joining us.
Richard, thank you so much for inviting me to be here with you today.
You are so welcome. And we look forward to talking to you again in the new year.
Okay.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.